This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, September 22nd, the Norris Group proudly presents its 10th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Coach Fullerton, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Las Brisas Escrow, MVT Productions, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Realty 411, and White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and tickets.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group, and I'm interviewing Bruce today.
Hello.
Since we are getting prepared for I Survive Real Estate, and we've been getting a few phone messages and emails about Florida. So the good news is that we have heard from Doug Duncan and Peter Fortunato and John Schaub. They are well, some property damage, but they've also been asking about you. So you want to fill them in on Florida a little bit?
As far as my project, we did very well. We built them to the spec of knowing that could happen, and as luck would have it, Leesburg probably hasn't seen a hurricane in 100 years that really was a direct hit. The eye went right over Leesburg, and we have one roof that got hit by something that was kind of jagged, and outside of that, we have very little damage. So we're very fortunate, but part of that was the experience I had in Andrew looking at the different survivability of different types of construction, manufactured home versus stick built versus concrete.
Yeah.
And it was very different.
We are actually going to do something a little earlier. So we've been going through the buying systems course that we've got online, and there is a chapter, buying system, I think it's 18, inside the portal, is investing after a natural disaster. And the system specifically talks more about, you know, the process of how to get in the way, but you have such juicy details about that. You covered Katrina versus Andrew, so we'll touch a little bit on that, and then some things, you know, specific to this time around. But just some stats as of today. It's Wednesday when we're recording this, so Hurricane Harvey, Houston. Oddly enough, we had family in Houston,
right.
So you sort of had some personal... Our family had some insight into both situations, but for Harvey, about 20,000 still remain in shelters and hotels. It's killed 75 people. Interesting, I was looking up the information on Katrina. Over 1,800 people were killed during Katrina.
Yeah.
So what a huge difference. And Hurricane Andrew, 65. So this has more loss of life there in the Houston area. But 50 inches of rain in some parts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
In such a short amount of time. That is so crazy. 120,000 people rescued in Houston, which is really interesting. Hurricane Irma, we don't have as much information as of now. It seems like, I don't know if it's because people watched what was going on in Houston, but it seemed, I have a lot of people, friends that I've worked with over the years in Florida. For the most part, it seems like people really heeded the warning and got out.
In Houston?
No, in Florida.
In Florida.
Compared to Houston.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well, big difference.
And there was a little bit of a lot of people complaining about Houston specifically because it escalated so quickly. They didn't think it was going to be serious, and boom, it happened. And they almost made the decision not to tell people to leave because it would have been more dangerous.
Right. You could have drowned your car. They lost like 500,000 cars.
I know.
So if you had 500,000 people in there, or 1,000,000 people in them?
Yeah. Stuck on the road in traffic.
Yeah.
Getting deluged by 50 inches of rain. I could see where that would have been an issue. So $75 billion worth of damage so far in Texas and counting. And Irma, at this point, as of Wednesday, is 4 million still without power, 22 confirmed dead in the U.S., 37 in the Caribbean. That may increase. There's a story out today about a retirement community who lost power.
Yeah.
And then the Florida Keys getting, of course, hit the hardest. But so I know a lot more information is going to come about, you know, in the next couple of weeks as we assess the damage. But holy cow, is this ringing true to you, having been part of the Andrew process?
You know, Andrew was kind of an accident. And a lot of buying systems are, by the way. It's how you go through as a buyer and you find a niche that you go, well, I guess if that's repetitive, I guess I could understand how to treat the next hurricane, you know, because I know what happened. Okay, well, Andrew, I wouldn't have never thought about it being a buying opportunity But Alex Navarro, my friend, was in Florida. I had taught him the business. So he was running an ad that he bought houses in the paper. And then hurricane hit. He lived in Miami, mm-hmm. and he still had the ad in there. And he wasn't trying to take advantage of a situation. It just, his ad was there.
Right.
Well, 30 days after the hurricane, he got these phone calls coming in saying, okay, I've received my insurance check and it's for 80% of the value of my property. And I would like to get the rest of 20% from a buyer. So Alex goes to see the property and you understand that the amount of damage was mind-boggling. When I flew into Florida and looked at that, it was hard for me to conceive of an area coming back. There were 90% of the homes had roof damage and big flood damage inside because of the torrential rain, mm-hmm. and insulation had been so heavy. It was all blown in, got heavy, took out the ceiling.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. Visually, plus 30 days had passed since when I got there, people were writing their policy numbers in black paint on their house. So you were passing by a neighborhood that was 5 years old. It looked like Beirut.
Wow.
And the visual was so impactful. I had to sit back and go, do I even want to do this? Because I really thought this may never change.
Well, and let me back up for a second. You're basically saying people were calling saying they got the insurance check and they were willing. You were making them basically 100%
right.
whole.
That was the greatest thing about this experience is the people got to move on completely whole, 100% cash from the insurance and the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
But the deal was I had to end up with something that was probably overestimated by the insurance guy.
Okay.
So you got to think about this massive number of people descend in one area that are insurance adjusters. Their experience ranges from maybe great to I don't know what I'm doing. So they're looking at this damage. It looks visually awful. And so the city is also going out and participating, red tagging everything in sight. So it's not inhabitable. The insurance company sees the red tag, says, yeah, it's total. They get 80%. Well, we come back in there and this was what started the whole thing. Alex called me up. He said, can you fly out here? Because at the time he didn't have a construction background. Mm-hmm. He says, I think I'm looking at something that is, we could debris it, take out all the junk. And I think the structure is still fine. And so that's what we started buying were those homes that were totaled. But when we took all the junk out, we could have the city come back out. They would reinspect it and go, yes, this is fine. You can go ahead and fix this. Well, now we had a 20% basis of cost.
Right.
And it was interesting because it was one of those times where you were actually helping people move on. Because you think about how many homes were uninhabitable. Those people had to go somewhere when there was nowhere to go. When I got into Miami, there were two rental houses in the newspaper, two in the entire city, and they were going for $4,500 and $5,000.
Oh,
okay, so you couldn't go anywhere. So getting a check from an investor and getting it as an investor, who cares if it took a long time to get crews there or whatever? You had a cost basis that you would never see again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference, and this is important, was the type of hurricane that Andrew was wind damage, not 10 feet of flood water.
That's what was interesting in the chapter I was reviewing. You really compared Katrina to Andrew, and it's water versus wind.
Right, and I got, of course, because since we wrote that chapter, we got instant calls. Are you going to Katrina? Are you going there?
Or New Orleans. Yeah. Okay.
Are you going to New Orleans to buy stuff? No, because this is different. You know, you have 8 feet of water sit in a house. You can forget it.
I mean,
that's something I don't want to take on. Maybe there's an expert that can say, oh, yeah, that's doable. The other problem is a lot of people are not covered by flood insurance.
And let me just read something. It's called forced flood insurance. The National Flood Insurance Program was due to expire this month, but there's been a 3-month extension, so through December. So Congress has to act on this now. That'll be fun. The program started in 1968, and it is administered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the goal is to reduce impacts of flooding. So it's providing low-cost insurance for people because private insurance companies were like, forget it,
right?
You know, because they knew it was going to be a total loss.
Correct.
Well, part of the issue was, I think it expired back in 2010, and they were looking at greatly increasing because the rates are not commensurate with the risk. So I don't know if these numbers are true. I didn't have enough time to research it, but they're saying that there's something like $2 billion available right now in the fund. They can borrow up to $5 billion, but they're in Harvey alone is $75 billion worth of damage. So it's laughable.
Well, what's interesting about those ratios is, okay, $75 billion of damage, but what percentage of that was insured? And does FEMA come to the rescue with loans?
Yeah. So yes, but you still have to buy the insurance policy. So this is where it gets interesting. Those with insurance on average in 2016, you know, on actual real claims, got on average $86,000 worth of a payout, while those without the insurance got an average $9,000. So there's a huge difference. So I have to assume the people with the insurance policy, number one, got dealt with first. And those who didn't were sort of left at the whim because they're not a priority and they're getting far less. So,
well, why wouldn't they get less? They didn't have the insurance.
Well, my question to you is, do you remember in Andrew people with and without?
I mean, well, it wasn't a flood issue. See, that was the difference. Everybody had
wind. Okay.
Wind. And that was, and that's sort of backed by some government program, and it's not outrageously expensive. It's very different than earthquake insurance.
Right. Okay.
It goes partly with the deal. Matter of fact, when I got insured on the Florida properties, the price was so reasonable, I contested it. I basically said, okay, I'm new here. Right in layman's language, I have a hurricane. What is my maximum out of pocket? Mm-hmm. And so she actually wrote it in an email so I could see, okay, I mean, that's what it is. So that's what was the difference. But a lot of people, almost everybody has that insurance in Florida that has wind. It has wind insurance. If you own a structure, you have the fire policy and you have a rider that's for the hurricane. And it's not that much more expensive.
And I was reading a Pew Research, you know, their government back. They're saying a large amount of people don't realize that they're not covered by their insurance because it's an addendum. And there's this huge amount of people who are not. So that's what's interesting.
Well, For the flood, you probably have a huge percentage of people not covered.
Right, but wind probably.
And the odds are, I mean, what's the year, you know, in Houston? Isn't that a 500-year flood or a 1,000-year flood?
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a 500-year flood or more.
Right.
And you're kind of going, okay, well, that's, it would happen to be when we had relatives move there within like a year.
Right.
So, you know, it's the wrong year, I guess.
Yeah, luckily they lived in a multi-structure, so they weren't damaged, but the very bottom of the carport was flooded and lots of cars lost.
Think of the comeback, because this is what I did. The visual in Andrew was so bad in Miami that I really was considering not doing anything because I couldn't imagine this place coming back. But I called where Hugo hit. Okay. It was the most recent bad hurricane. So I called the city where that was, and I talked to the actual city building department. I said, tell me what happened. And I talked to the realtors too. And in a year, it was like it never happened, except everybody had a new roof and and it was great. And it was full employment and full occupancy and on and on. In other words, it turned around. Mm-hmm. You can't have that in Houston. You have too many people uninsured. You have too many houses that will be vacant like they are now 10 years from now.
Right. So like Hurricane Katrina, you have a lot of New Orleans
Never got redeveloped. It's still sitting there. I wouldn't want to be. How'd you like to be, okay, gosh, you got a great deal on a house, fix it up, and nine of your neighbors are still boarded and green.
Right.
You can't do that. Now, that's what happened in Florida just now, Irma, didn't cause that extensive of a damage at all. I mean, if I got hit by the eye right over my houses, basically, at 85 miles an hour, now that's very different than what happened with Andrew. That was 165. Right. And there were some visuals there that I'll just never forget, that you realize, okay, you don't want to be waiting at home for this thing.
Right.
There was about 1,000 trees in one location. There's a lot of that in Florida. They were about 50 feet tall and they were all snapped off at about 20 feet.
Wow.
Which created, you know, like wood shards, which flew through telephone poles like arrows.
Really?
Yeah. So you're driving there and they get these little funny things coming out of the telephone poles going, what is that? It was piercing. They were going so fast. They pierced the telephone pole were on both sides of it. And you're kind of going, yeah, you wouldn't want to walk around.
Well, I can understand signs. They were talking about, you know, signs becoming loose in the wind becoming
projectiles.
Weapons, yeah. But like shards of wood, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, anything moving 160 some mile an hour are going to get you.
I always laugh. These news reporters standing out in the wind are like, yeah, we get it. There's wind.
Yeah.
Well, so there definitely is a few things to think about, Irma versus Harvey. So it's really flood versus wind.
Yes.
Wind being a far less of an issue. Now, Irma, compared to Katrina. So with the New Orleans area, you've got a levee issue to where there's an infrastructure piece where there's always going to be an issue.
Yes.
So Houston, I mean, if this is a 1,000-year flood, you know, that's not even the same thing.
No, they're all different. But unless you're a water expert, but here's the problem with water. My guess would be that in Andrew, the assumption of damage was way greater than reality.
Okay.
In Houston, the assumption of damage will be way less than reality. You don't see it, right? You got, okay, all the water's gone. I've got soaked drywall. So you just take off the drywall. Well, I fixed those houses. There was a flood that was in Northern California, Napa Valley.
Okay.
I bought 6 mobile homes that had been submerged for several days, 4 or 5 feet of water.
Okay.
Those sat there for 2 years with lawsuits going around. I bought them, let's say, 3 years after the event.
Oh, okay.
And you did not know what you were dealing with. I just bought them for maybe 10% of what we sold them for.
Wow.
So I was going to take, I was be willing to take the risk. But when you get in the wall, all of a sudden now you're dealing with, okay, you're dealing with mold throughout everything. And, you know, it's just, you have to really realize this is a different animal. We had to fix those houses one at a time.
Well, because you're not just talking about water, it's chemicals, it's sewer, it's, there's a lot that's been soaking into that wood, especially if it's been marinating in that for a while. How do you even deal with that? I mean, how do you know what you've got?
Yeah, well, you don't. And that's why you can bet that somebody's underestimated the repair cost.
Right, okay.
And the insurance company often isn't even involved because they're not there. Mm-hmm. So the lenders, you know, I guess the only deals that would be had would be from the lenders.
Okay.
At a huge discount. In other words, you really, as a buyer, could care less if they say no, because you have to get such a big margin to take that on. But that could happen. I mean, these lenders are going to take these back with no one to look to. And they're going to have to decide, do I want to keep this? That's a liability, too. One of the problems, again, is that you'll have a loan in the middle of a neighborhood that's totally decimated,
yeah,
and you're going to buy that house. Mm. That lender doesn't have loans on every house. So you're going to buy one house and hope that the next door lender is going to react in a similar way and sell it,
yeah,
or you've got a problem.
Yeah, we've never had two Category 4 storms hit at the same time. I mean, come on, you've got two letters back to back.
Yeah.
Harvey and Irma. I mean, it's definitely a huge deal. So you've got two major states, two of the biggest states, some of the biggest cities. I mean, basically the entire state of Florida got
hit. That was crazy. I mean, looking at that. Well, and I'm sure there's opportunity in some places that were damaged by wind in Florida.
Okay.
That would definitely be something that if I was interested in it, that's the hat I would put on. Let's go after the wood the areas that got wind damaged, to where somebody got totaled,
mm-hmm,
or it looks like it's totaled.
Right.
And then we can say, let us debris it, and they go, see, it's not, it's still structurally sound, and then fix it from there. That's the scenario that you need.
Yeah, and I would just warn investors, really pay attention to the flood insurance program, because it could increase substantially because of how underfunded it is, and it's just really not, the rates are not commensurate with the risk and how much the government's going to pay out.
Right, and you know what? There's Florida investors that intentionally don't have flood insurance. I mean, I know that for a fact.
Really? Why?
Yes. Well, because it's so cost prohibitive, and a lot of these people that own waterfront properties, they have old houses where the value has become the dirt.
Right.
Oh. And actually they go, so what? You know, we've got a 1,300 square foot house. It's worth $1.2 million. Okay. So if it fell down, we could replace it with $200,000 and have, or $300,000 and build a, bigger house and have more value. So they're almost seeing it as, it's not a big deal. They don't have a loan on them.
Okay.
I got told this by one of the guys that's getting one of the awards, by the way.
Oh, jeez. That's a strategy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just a rational thought. It's just that he doesn't really care if that goes down, in a sense, because he'll replace it and he'll save $10,000 a year not paying the insurance. So in essence, it'll pay for itself.
Well, I am getting calls from investors who are definitely seeing dollar signs, but is there anything that you would caution them, sort of what they should be thinking and looking for at the local level?
I think if they're going to go into that, they have to realize, first of all, they better know what they're looking at. They better know structural versus just physical, bad visual damage. Okay. Because they need to, if it's red tagged, you need a city to come out and take that back.
Right.
And they got to look and say, okay, yeah, we made a mistake, basically. Okay. The other thing is, and this is probably not true with this one, but with Andrew, it was, every roofer in Florida had a smile on their face and a backlog of a year's worth of work
right
today. So good luck getting an estimate. So you had to really think about, okay, who's going to fix this and how long is it going to be before it's fixed?
How good is it going to be fixed?
Right. So, you bring crews from California.
Right. That's interesting. So yeah. You paid to have...
It's the only way we could get them fixed. So reasonable.
And they stayed with you? I mean, wouldn't that be a concern?
That's a really good thought. Yeah, we only had an isolated bunch of houses, and so that was more likely why that occurred. But if you were thinking, well, I'm going to add to this pile during the year, yeah, they would be going off to happier grounds.
Interesting thought. Number one, Florida is not exactly known for contractors being very good and consistent. Number two, you've got two of the biggest states, and California, the building industry has just sort of started coming back.
Yeah.
Do you, as a California contractor, just be like, you know what, I'm moving to Florida because I'm going to be really busy, or Texas for the next 2 years because I'm going to be busy? Will California have an issue?
For lack of
contractors leaving?
It already have. I mean, honestly, that's one of the problems for people that are builders, is skilled labor.
Right.
Because they went to oil world. So, as a matter of fact, when Kirsten lived in, there was a town that she lived in, went to like a summer program at a church.
Oh, yeah.
And it was big in oil. And it was like unemployment was zero, and the McDonald's worker got paid $25 an hour. It was completely nuts. I said, okay, well, you guys must have a housing boom. Oh, we have the housing shortage, but there's no boom because you can't get anybody to stay on the job. The second they're framing a house, somebody from the oil world comes over. What are you doing working here? Well, you can make $100,000. You don't have to know anything.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah. What do you do?
Yeah. So it was just a very interesting thing. So yeah, builders, again, water's different, man. That's a niche that this isn't the simple fix. And it's not one house.
Now, is water in states like Florida handled the same way as California? That's one of my concerns. I have my first rental in Florida. Luckily, I just got word today. Nothing happened. So I'm so excited because I just put a brand new screen like over the pool. So I was like, what are the chances that's gone? But everything's fine. But is water, like we've got the CLUE reports, you know, in California, and it's recorded and it stays on the property for how long?
Oh, well, quite a while. You're talking about that someone else will look at it and say, oh, right? You have had a claim.
Right.
Right.
Is that the same nationwide?
Yep, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'll have a lot of houses that have that blemish, if you will.
Okay.
Good story for opportunity. There was a homeless guy in Florida.
I'm glad you're going to tell the story before we end.
And he made his survive. He survived by collecting aluminum cans. Mm-hmm. So in Florida, though, you have bug problems. So every house, I mean, almost has an aluminum room. Mm-hmm. And when Andrew came, it took out, 100,000 aluminum rooms.
Yeah.
This guy went from cans to picking up rooms. He rented a truck and picked up aluminum rooms constantly and cashed them in. And he got the license to replace the room. So he turned into a multimillionaire in a year, picking up aluminum rooms and then replacing them. That was, you know,
providing a really good service.
Exactly. And you just think, wow, there's opportunity anytime there's something like that.
Right. That's a fun story. We should try to find that guy and interview him.
You know what? I'm sure you could find. I remember the picture in the newspaper with his fleet of trucks going out to do their thing.
When you're getting the phone calls, when you're looking for opportunities, are you talking to banks, realtors, the sellers directly?
Yep. It's almost always the seller directly. And what was the impetus was I just got my check.
Okay.
And they can't go anywhere. They can't go back home. They live in a red tagged house, or they used to. Mm-hmm. They're literally living out of their car because there's no hotel rooms. I mean, there's nothing to stay in. So they want to go. That's what the motivation is. And you are not hurting them. You have an insurance company that said, we'll write this check and has. And you have a building department that said it's damaged so much. We think it's red tagged right now. I mean, that's the condition. And then when you come back and debris it, they go, no, it's not. Well, that's where your margin is. You have more knowledge than they had. Mm-hmm. And say, okay. And you're talking to the owners. When you get to give them that check, they're 100% free to go somewhere else. They don't own that thing anymore, and they're free to go.
That's so
interesting. It was a pretty cool niche.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any specific discount that you're looking for to take this risk? Because it sounds like it's not necessarily like a 3-month fix and flip. This is maybe a year-long journey.
Yeah. Well, I like that number of 20%. In other words, it's you're 100% whole, all cash, no closing costs.
Yeah.
That's the number.
Yeah, that's the number. Okay. Don't get greedy. Well, you know, thank you for doing this. It's so, the timing is just pretty great on it. I'm sure we'll end up talking a little bit about it. You know, they're still in foreclosure mode. Florida is still sort of on the dealing with their own little quadrant. You know, what you'd say they're in, sort of like the two or the three.
Yeah, they have an interesting blend there. And again, I don't pretend to completely understand Florida like I do California, but the way it was handled too. You know, you have a lot of foreclosures that have gotten loss mitigated, and there's a 4-year foreclosure process, which really kind of prolonged their quadrant two, but they've been moving up in price now, and builders are very busy. So they're kind of in their own quadrant four now. I mean, it's been that 2-year transition since I've been there.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate. First Lending Solutions, Guaranteed Rate and Nathan Chiboya, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, LA South Rhea, Michael Ryan, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, San Francisco Bay Real Estate Networking Summit, Sunoco Corporation, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, Think Realty, UDirect IRA Services, West and South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc., See isurvivedrealestate.com for event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.